south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, before we get on to talking about the Decameron, hope I can finish off today. By the way, I don't get a single dime, nor a freebie, not even a drink or a free cigar, for talking about the good, the bad, the ugly concerning Decameron all-inclusive resorts. Now, don't think that I'm plugging the place in any way. I'm just making you aware that there is an option where you can live for an entire year at an all-inclusive beachside tropical resort on a small pension or a Social Security check. So is that really possible? Well, we'll see if it is in just a few minutes, so stay tuned. However, before we get into that, are you up for a story? Sure you are. Now, occasionally I get emails from people saying, Johnny, my Spanish is good enough. I really don't need a lawyer for the small stuff. And people will say things like, Johnny, you know, once I get down there, I don't want to pay anybody. I can do things on my own. I'll find my way around. I always do. And some people will say they were backpackers 20 or 25 years ago, so they think they could sort of jump right in and pick up where they left off. Yep, I get emails like that. In fact, lately I got an email from a guy saying, look, Johnny, I went to the Panama government website to find out what it would cost to get residency. And as it turns out, it would cost around $500 to $600. That's if I hung around, stood in the lines, and did it all myself. Then he said, yet on the internet, you can find lawyers in Panama that'll charge you $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, even $6,000 to get residence. Then he says, same is true for Costa Rica, Belize, Colombia, Peru, almost all the other Latin countries. So as you can see by these emails, people are thinking, why should I pay a lawyer when I can do it myself and save a few hundred, even thousands of dollars? Sure, if you've got much more time than money, it can be done. However, anyone who tries to do that stuff on their own knows their Spanish has to be pretty good to even attempt it. In fact, you'll find even in Latin countries that are way off the tourist trail and thus the lawyers charge non-gringo prices, you'll find an English-speaking lawyer will charge $1,200 to $2,000 to get you your temporary, permanent, or pensionado residency. However, again, it's true. If you go on the internet to the government websites for any of those countries, you'll find it's $500 or $600, give or take, to do the whole thing yourself without the help of anyone else. And I do know some gringos who have actually done that. But in almost all cases where that's been accomplished by a lone gringo or gringa, said person has been living in that country continuously for quite a while, usually 6 months to a year or so. So you need the time and the patience to jump through all those hoops and stand in all those lines. And you'll have to know some Spanish if you're going to do those things on your own. So yes, it can be done. I've seen it. But do stock up on audiobooks and regular paper books too. You'll need them for the hours and hours you'll spend in those lines. That said, here's a little story that just might convince you otherwise. Because you see, when you hire a lawyer, you're getting a new contact, a kind of a friend, and also a sort of insurance policy. So what does that mean? Well, first let me preface this by saying nearly all Latin American governments are kind of in a state of perpetual chaos. This is Latin America, and they do call it the third world, right? Fact is, all you have to do is walk into any government office, be it the aduana, immigration, port authority, municipal office, driver's license bureau, you name it. You'll spot redundancies and inefficiencies and people sitting on their dead asses everywhere. As expat Eddie likes to say, five government workers to every pencil. That's just the way it is. And the same thing with government office supplies. Computers broken, printers out of ink, long dead copy machines used as doorstops, and bundles of papers stacked to the ceiling. Now, in some of the newer offices, when you walk in, they look fairly first world and modern. But if you get a chance to peek in the back room behind closed doors, you'll see what I mean. It's like one of those Hollywood movie facades, you know, of a grand palace, and behind it, there's just a dingy, mold-filled room full of props. Do note, as you get involved in the process of getting some paperwork done through the government, whether it's residency, licensing, whatever, it's an ever-changing process, so you could get hung up anywhere along the way. And if you don't have a lawyer, you won't even know it. And sometimes even your lawyer won't know it. But soon enough, it'll come to light and it'll have to be dealt with. And better him than you, that's for sure. And that's why I'm relating the following story. A year or so ago, a gringo friend of mine hired a lawyer in Nicaragua to process his residency. Turns out this guy started a nice little business on a Nicaraguan coastal beach town. It was a legit brick-and-mortar business, so he went to a lawyer to get all the paperwork done correctly. And at the same time, he applied for a permanent residency. So far, so good. His business is running. He's waiting on his residency paperwork. And by the way, when you apply for residency in pretty much any Latin country, you're allowed to stay in that country as long as you want legally. You don't have to go out every 90 days, as are the laws pertaining to regular tourists and tourist visas. You do know that as a person coming from a first world country to pretty much any Latin country, you're considered a tourist and you automatically get a 90-day visa as soon as you arrive. And if you stay over that limit, even one day, fines will be assessed and accumulate every day you spend in the country. And when you try to leave by air or by land, you'll be hit up for that fine at the airport or at the border. Even though it's only a buck or $2 a day, it does add up. If it happens to you, don't fret. You don't end up on some kind of government shit list. By no means are you persona non grata. You can get back into the country at any time. They just want you to pay that fine. And believe me, they're as friendly as can be and are glad to take your money. I've been in that situation myself. Anyway, once you've applied for permanent or temporary residency, you don't have to worry about that. You can stay in the country as long as you want. And generally, within a half year to a year, you get your little DPI, or residency card. Then you see, when you fly out of the country or drive out of the country, just show them your passport and that residency card. And now, it doesn't matter at all if you've been in the country over 90 days, or even a year, or 90 years for that matter. Perfectly legal to fly out without paying a fine. You are a resident. Okay, so my friend was in Nicaragua for about a year and a half. He stayed there the whole time, got his business up and running. And during that first year, he frequently contacted his lawyer asking about that little DPI card because he hadn't got it yet. Even though he was told by his lawyer, and he read it all over the internet, that it usually takes 6 months or less after you sign the initial paperwork to get that DPI residency card. However, you must always remember, this is Latin America, you know, and when you're dealing with the government, they're on double mañana time. Well, as it turns out, about 3/4 of a year into the process, he got notified by his lawyer that his residency had been approved, i.e. no longer pending, par for the course. And he went down with his lawyer's assistant to the immigration office, where they printed out an official document signed, stamped, and sealed, saying he was now an official permanent resident. Yay, congratulations. However, his lawyer told him he'd have to wait maybe a month or two, or whenever they got around to it, because they were behind, chronically behind, to get the actual little plastic DPI card with the non-functional RFID chip in it. Gotta love it. This is Latin America, you know. And you know, when I see a DPI, knowing that the RFID chip doesn't work, that always makes me laugh. Now, for those of you who haven't seen a Latin American DPI, the letters in Spanish standing for Documento Personal Identificación. In English, that stands for Personal Identification Document. Now, these things are exactly the same size as a driver's license or credit card. Yeah, like we all need another piece of plastic in our pockets, right? But where were we? Oh, yeah. Anyway, after about a year and a half in Nicaragua, my friend decided he's going to meet a friend in Panama, a place he'd never been, stay at the Hard Rock Hotel there, check out Panama City, and that great free trade zone in Colón. And since he had a couple of friends in Costa Rica he hadn't seen in a long time, he decided to make a road trip out of it. He figured from where he was in Nicaragua, it was maybe 4 or 5 hours to San Jose, Costa Rica, then south, down through Panama, another 5 or 6 hours to Panama City. Anyway, he was looking forward to the trip and started driving. And when he got to the border of Costa Rica and Nicaragua, he handed over his passport and that official piece of paper that said he was a permanent resident in Nicaragua. He handed that stuff over to the immigration official on the Nicaraguan side of the border. However, little did he know, but all was not well. The official entered his data into the computer and stopped him right there. He asked, "Where's your DPI card?" He said, "Well, I'm still waiting for that. Hasn't been processed yet." And the guy said, "Well, then you'll have to pay that daily fine then. You've been in the country a long time, past your 90 days. And he said, wait a minute. I just gave you the official paper that says I've been a resident of Nicaragua. Therefore, I don't have to pay any fines at all. I was not overstaying my visa. I don't have a visa. I'm a resident." Then the immigration guy gave him a look and said, "Wait here just a minute." And he took his passport and his paperwork and he walked over to another lard-ass government slug, this time a woman, eaten her lunch at a big old desk just stacked with disorganized papers. He came back about 5 minutes later and said, "Well, if you don't have that DPI card, you have to have a stamp in your passport saying that you're a permanent resident. And you don't have one, so you'll have to drive back to Managua, go to the immigration office, get that stamp, and come on back." And my friend said, "What? This doesn't make sense at all." By the way, my friend speaks enough Spanish to be able to get pissed off in Spanish and give it back in Spanish, too. Then he said to the guy in Spanish, "I don't get it. I have the official paper right here with all the stamps on it that says I've been a resident for a long time, many months." And the immigration guy said, "Yeah, but you don't have the stamp on your passport." Which would have surely meant another 3 or 4 hours to Managua, 3 or 4 hours back. So he'd have lost the whole day, not to mention who knows how long at the immigration office to try to get that stamp. That could take a day in itself, and he might even have to bring his lawyer down with him or his lawyer's aide. So naturally, he did what any gringo in that position would do. He sat down on the dirty steps and just started crying. No, just kidding. He called his lawyer. In fact, he did it right in front of the immigration officer. Then, and as luck would have it, the lawyer didn't pick up. So he did what his lawyer told him in case of emergency. He got on WhatsApp, sent him an SOS text message, and his lawyer phoned right back. He explained on the phone to the lawyer what happened, and the lawyer said, "That's absolutely crazy. I've never heard of a situation like that." Then he said, "Put the guy on the phone for me." So my friend handed the phone to the immigration officer. They talked for about 5 minutes. He then walked over to his fat-ass supervisor slug, who was still packing an oversized sandwich down her gullet, handed the phone to her. They had a conference for a few minutes. She went to a door, walked outside to have a private conference with my friend. She still had the phone in her hand. The lawyer was on it. She handed it to my friend, and the lawyer said, "Here's what you do. You make 3 copies of that official document that says you're a resident. You give one to the immigration lady. Keep the other two with you to show to immigration when you come back through on your return trip." So there you have it, a weird little story of why you really need to have a lawyer. Because you see, my friend surely could have gotten his residency paperwork on his own and saved some money even. But then what would he have done when he tried to get through the border and was faced with that situation? With no lawyer to call, he'd have had to gone back to Managua, and who knows how long that would have taken. Worse yet, what if he would have gotten in a car accident on the road? Any number of things can happen when you're on a road trip, right? Think about it. What would you do? If you don't have a lawyer who you have a certain professional relationship with, who are you going to call? I know your drunken gringo buddies at the expat bar who told you, "You don't need a lawyer, you can do it all yourself and save some money." They'll get you out of it, right? Okay, related to the fact that you get a 90-day visa when you come into most any Latin country, meaning whatever country you land in, you have to be out in 90 days or start paying a fine. Anyway, since the last few shows I've been talking about the Decameron all-inclusive resorts, kind of explaining what a great deal it is, how to get the best bang for your buck, and even live there all year round. Already, those last few shows have spawned quite a few emails. Like this one from Rick, which I'll paraphrase a bit. He says, "Johnny, do you plan on discussing laundry services at Decameron in future episodes? After all, if one's spending a lot of time at one of these resorts, they may want to wash their clothes from time to time, of course. Not to mention he asks about tourist visas. He wonders, should so-called full-time guests plan on moving to a different Decameron resort in another country every 90 days because of that normal 3-month visa stay limit?" Both good questions, though the first one might seem a bit mundane, it really is. Everyone knows a mountain of dirty clothes can make or break a vacation, not to mention a relationship. Anyway, regarding laundry, of course, they have regular laundry service like they do at hotels. You know, a bag in the closet and you stuff your clothes in there. Call maid service and they do a big garbage bag full for around $5. Used that service myself, but that was a while back. Now, surely I would think there are easier and cheaper ways to do it. Though $5 for all that isn't all that bad, but you probably could get it for half that. I suppose the first thing would be to ask any of the laundry ladies or maids if there was anyone interested in making some money on the sly or off the books. After all, these are ladies making around $250 to $300 a month. And at least half of the resort's workers go home every night or after their shifts, taking buses to one of the nearby cities, that's where the help comes from, I'm certain you could make a nice deal with one of the locals. Of course, there's nothing stopping you, too, from hopping a bus or a cab and going to one of the nearby towns and to a laundromat. By the way, most laundromats here in Latin America off the Gringo Tourist Trail and some on the Tourist Trail are really a complete service. You just drop your clothes off to the lady in charge and you come back later in the day and they're all done, folded, starched, whatever you want. That's part of the service. And of course, there are the traditional laundromats where you shove in your own coins and such. But it's almost just as cheap to have the lady in charge do everything for you. And why not? One of the huge advantages of being in Latin America is that labor is so damn cheap. So in the end, I think if you're hooking up on a long-term basis with a Decameron hotel, if you just ask around a bit, you'll figure out a nice cheap way to get your laundry done, either on the premises or in a nearby town. In fact, if you're driving into pretty much any Decameron, they're on the beach, remember, right before you get there, you'll be driving along a road that branches off from a main highway. For example, the one in El Salvador, you'll turn off a very big highway and be on a road that's kind of out in the boonies. And soon enough, you'll see little rustic farmhouses and the occasional mom-and-pop corner store, along with roadside farmer stands selling coconuts and papayas, etc. All on a nice paved road leading right up to the main entrance gate of the Decameron. I bet there are any number of ladies along that road who would jump at the chance to do your laundry. Wait a minute. That doesn't sound right, does it? After all, many of those people living in those little houses and such are the same ones that work at the Decameron doing the very same thing. So then what about the second part of the question, that 90-day visa thing? Yes, fortunately or unfortunately, if you decide to do the Decameron thing as a retirement plan or option, you'll have to arrange your stays so that they don't last more than 90 days in any particular country a Decameron is located in. That is, of course, unless you decide to make one particular Decameron your sort of home base and you stay there more than 90 days or even most of the year, or perhaps forever or until they carry you out on a stretcher. So if you decide on a home-based Decameron, in that case, you'll apply for residency in that country and you're all set. And still, you can work your plan out so that you can stay at other Decamerons throughout Latin America. Remember, there are more than 50 of them in about 10 different Latin countries, though you'll have to limit those stays to 90 days or less. And remember, if you actually plan on going over the 90-day limit, right before it's up, you can go down to immigration in that country and get a 90-day extension. Normally, that'll cost you $20 to $50. But you can't do that indefinitely. You'll still have to go out of any particular Latin country at least twice a year if you don't have residency. Clear as mud, huh? So on that note, let's continue where we left off last week with this Decameron story. If you recall, I was sitting in a big room at one of those 15 or 20 odd tables that each had a guy with a clipboard and an iPad trying to sell a Decameron club package. Remember, I said last time that the guy that was trying to sell me mine had pulled the typical used car salesman bit after I got up and tried to walk away. He didn't like that. The second deal he offered me was 3,000 points at $17,000. And if you remember from last show, I did the calculations and figured you need around 3,000 points to be able to do the maneuvers necessary with that point system to stay at a Decameron all-inclusive resort for an entire year. That would be double occupancy, 3,000 points for two people. Now, at this point, my relationship with this guy was getting a little rough. I was the only guy there that was asking a lot of questions, beating him down, and just was kind of a hard sell. In fact, I was the only gringo there. And at the whole resort, I saw maybe three or four gringos. And they weren't there alone as gringos. They were married to a Latino or a Latina, so they knew all about the Decameron through their marriage partners, who they met up in the States. And by marrying into their Latin families, they learned about this wonderful, all-inclusive, very inexpensive resort complex that only exists in Latin America. By the way, I have to tell you that somehow, by hook or crook, French Canadians have found out about the Decameron, but only in a very small way. So how'd I find that out? Well, many times I was sitting around a restaurant and a crowd of 15 or 20 of them walk in and sit down at a gigantic reserved table. Not to mention, they were all retired and very old, too. I don't think a single one was under 70. And one of them told me, there's a travel agency in Montreal that puts together package deals along with charter flights for retired Canadians. Yep, they fly in a couple of times a week. So they're coming down as regular tourists. not buying the Decameron Club deal. They just come down for a week or so as old retired Canadian snowbirds, always speaking French, no English, no Spanish. So when I say I only ran into maybe three or four real live gringos, of course they were attached to their Latin partners, I'm not including the French Canadians in that group. Even though there are maybe 40 or 50 of them running around at any given time at that Decameron. Even so, I didn't see a single one of them being sold one of those Decameron Club plans. Oh, and get this. In the evening, when they have their Las Vegas-style floor show, the MC always says, raise your hand, stand up, and yell if you're from Costa Rica, Mexico, Peru, whatever Latin country. And when they say Canada, the MC always says a few words in French. And the French Canadians, unlike the Latins, don't jump up and yell. They just kind of grunt politely. That's the way they are. So basically, the only so-called gringos you might see at a Decameron would be well-fossilized French Canadians. You'll know them because they always stick together, speak French, and usually, by the first or second day, are painfully sunburned. So they arrive as white as Wonder Bread and leave beet red. Ouch. Meanwhile, back at that little table with the salesman, I said I understand the membership rules for the Decameron Club have changed over the last few years, specifically regarding the food. I said, would you mind explaining that to me? He said, it used to be, till around 2 years ago, you bought your points in the club package, and it was all-inclusive, just as if you went down to your travel agency and booked a Decameron for an all-inclusive trip. Hotel, restaurants, food, drinks, all included. But now, we've changed those rules. He said, when you buy your points package, whether it's 1,000 points, 1,500, 3,000, whatever, those points are for your Decameron stays and facilities, but not the food. You buy the food extra. I said, what? You mean there's an extra charge for food? He said, yep. In fact, we have club package specials where you don't stay at the hotel at all. You just come as a day guest. He said, a lot of local people do that. They buy just the day package. And I said, so what's that all about? He says, well, normally it's $44 a person per day to come to the Decameron, enjoy yourself, swim, eat, drink to your heart's content, and then you go home at night because you don't have a room. We call that the all-inclusive food package. And I said, you got to be kidding, $44 a night per person? He said, yes, but that's somewhat misleading. The way it works out, we're always offering two-for-one specials on the food price, so almost all year round, you can get the all-inclusive food rate for $22 per person. Then he got on his iPad and pulled up a couple of months, and he was right. They were offering two-for-one food packages practically every single month. And I said, wait a minute. So you buy your points, and then you have to pay $22 a day for the all-inclusive food and drink portion of the deal? He said, that's right. And I said, well, wait a minute. Let me do some numbers here. And I figured out, if a gringo couple stayed all year round in a Decameron and paid $22 apiece every day for the food, beverage, and refreshment portion of the deal, that works out to around $16,000 a year for two. And then I said, okay, let's break this down. Suppose I bought 3,000 points right now. That would give me and another person double occupancy for a year. That's $17,000. Then I have to pay $16,000 extra to get the all-inclusive food and beverage portion of the deal. And you have to buy that, right? You can't just get one or the other. He said, well, you can do the food portion, but you'll only be a day guest. If you're a guest staying overnight, whether it's a day, 2 days, a week, or a year, yes, you'll pay $44 a day, normally $22 because we have deals all the time. Okay, so I worked the numbers. Two people, double occupancy for the entire year, provided, like he said, they offer deals all the time where you get two for one on the food, that would be around $33,000 a year for two, which would just about completely eat up two Social Security checks. So that said, if you compare that number to the number I checked out 4 or 5 years ago when I first talked to those two American Harley-Davidson guys who were living there full-time, the price has about doubled. Back then, if I remember, it was around $8,000 or $9,000 per person complete. $16,000 to $18,000 double occupancy for two people. But now it's doubled. However, when you think about it, it's still a fantastic deal. $33,000 for a couple for a year. Now, you might not know this, but certain cruise lines, like Norwegian and some others, offer their passengers a similar kind of retirement deal where they can live on a cruise ship for an entire year or forever, as long as they can fork out the dough. And how much is it? Well, it depends on the type and class of ship and cruise line, but it's anywhere from around $50,000 to $150,000 a year per person. Some cruise lines are even selling off cabins, like condos, which, if you saw the prices, you'd know it's only for the very rich. However, if you're going to do the year-round cruise ship retirement living option, you can count on having to dump $100,000 a year for two, double occupancy. And again, it's got to be double occupancy. In fact, the stats today show that 2% of all the passengers on cruise ships are long-term, senior couples staying 6 months or longer on one ship. So figure it out, $100,000 a couple and up, as compared to $33,000 with the Decameron, which I admit is cutting it close because you're counting on them offering that two-for-one food deal all the time. So to be safe, I'd say you should budget $35,000 to $40,000 a year for two, double occupancy. Still a great deal. And yes, I did knock the salesman down to his rock-bottom price. Or did I? Well, at that point, I thanked the guy, got up to leave, which was the third time I tried to make an exit, by the way, all on purpose, of course. And that's when he really kind of blew his stack. And actually called me a tacaño to my face, which means cheapskate. And that's when I looked him straight in the eye and I said, you know what? You forgot the cardinal rule of salesmanship. Never talk down to or insult your customer. Then I said, what if I called your supervisor over here right now and told him you insulted me? And you know what he said? Listen, I lived in the United States. Los Estados. In fact, he said, my father, he's up there now. A very successful businessman. 40 employees. Yeah, this guy had an attitude and a little Latin lisp to go along with it. Man, did I frustrate this guy. He just couldn't sell me. Then I said, well, if your dad's a successful businessman, has 40 employees, why aren't you up there working for him? Why are you sweating it out every day in the sun like this, trying to sell this stuff? Then he said, look at this. I have a BMW. And then he pulled out his keychain and showed me one of those little BMW plastic key rings that anyone could get for $5. Then he smiled a big smile, showing a couple of missing teeth in the back. Always a telltale sign of a class act. Now, remember, this guy's about 35 years old, long sleeves in an open-air tropical place, which was really weird because it's so hot. Why would he be wearing that? Till I realized he wore those long sleeves to cover up his gangbanger tats, which were slightly peeking through. Yep, the guy certainly did live in the U.S. and got deported. I'd bet my life on it. And I was kind of at war with this guy. So then what happened? Well, we'll have to wait till next time because we're getting towards the end of the show now. By the way, I've got one or maybe two more seats left for my Expat Insider Seminar in January 2017. Go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's 2017 seminar link. Time's a-wastin'.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.